states have a couple things in common, either low or no state income tax. That's an area that we need to concentrate as real estate investors on, and those markets, because we want to go to the markets where people are going to, not where they're leaving from.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
I've got Paul Lazelle here with me. Paul, how are you?
Doing great. How are you doing, Neil?
Good. I'm excited that we've connected. It's been a few years since we've seen each other in person, so it's good to get connected here virtually and have a conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you bet. We all got started in real estate somewhere, somehow, some way. What was your first entry point to the industry?
So I first bought my first property at the end of December of 2001, and it was a HUD property. And if you go back to that time, so I've been doing this for 22 years now. It's my 22nd year, which is crazy when you think about it. So I've seen the cycles. But that property was on HUD Home Store. Back then, I could have literally picked up a property a week in my local area up in where I was. I was in the Philadelphia area. It's obviously far different right now, but that was my first property. I got a partner with a guy on it. We picked it up for $29.5. We sold it for $69 3 months later and did well.
What did it feel like you were in heaven or what? What did that feel like?
It totally did. Yeah. Because, you know, I was working full time at this point for a bank. I was a commercial underwriter and I became a business development officer. So my exit strategy was always, all right, let's get enough deals under my belt, get enough income put aside so I can go ahead full time doing this. So did that in 2004. Finally, it took a little while, you know, a few years to get everything built up, but worked out well and I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah. Take me through 2008. What was the world like for you at that point in time?
That was crazy, right? Because that was where I was really focusing still on a fix and flip side. I really should have been pulling back. I'd done a couple wholesale deals before then, but I didn't like that I could only get, you know, 10, 15,000 on a wholesale when I could do 50 or 60 on a flip in that area at that point. So I started doing tons of rehabs and doing major rehabs, which I totally regret at that point because then the market tanked. To give you an example, one of the deals I had in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb of Philadelphia, I picked it up for, I think, around 200, was into it for about 265, 275 range, maybe a little bit more than that with all the holding costs and everything. Had under contract to sell for 315. One of the buyers lost their job at that point. This is the fall of 2008, right? Where it was falling apart. And then put it back on the market. Didn't get anything for 9 months. Finally got an offer until we kind of went back and forth and at $255 for it. It was like a $45,000 loss in that one. So that hurt. And I had several more like that. I think the most I lost on one was $65 and I had some like 15, 5, 10s. And then I decided, you know what? I got to shift my model. I got to go back to a less risky model by not having so much capital out there, not be so dependent upon the economy. If I wholesale more, much less risk, right? Much less risk holding time, much less contract, dealing with contractor headaches, as everybody in this business knows, is always a headache and will never go away.
Correct.
So I switched the model. We looked on its head. We went from 90-some% fix and flip, doing a little bit of buy and hold and a little bit of wholesaling to 80% wholesale, 10% fix and flip, 10% buy and hold.
Wholesaling. Now, when you made that shift, were you just in one market? What did that look like for you?
So at that point, I was in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, because it was so close, right? New Jersey and Delaware, Virginia was close. And even Pittsburgh, it was 5 hours across the state, but I still considered close enough for me to do deals. Then I started dabbling and extending into other states. Shortly thereafter, around 2010, I started buying Ohio, Indiana, the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, Texas, and just kept buying all over the country. And before you know it, I was in 44 out of 50 states.
And were you wholesaling primarily still?
Primarily wholesaling at that point. Occasionally, we would do a wholetail. Not really a full-scale fix and flips unless I had really good boots on the ground. For example, I do have somebody in Tucson, Arizona, great REO agent who has great contractors, who has great boots on the ground. So I don't mind doing a more full-scale rehab there because, well, we've done probably about 20-some with him over the years. And I have somebody there I can trust and count on, and the contractors as well. And same in Casper, Wyoming, and a couple other markets around the country. Sure. Of course, where I'm from in Pennsylvania, I have lots of contractors, lots of resources. Yeah. So I don't mind doing little bigger rehabs there, but I'm kind of scaling it back. Now what we do, we buy all over the country. We're just doing, hey, the basics to make it mortgageable. Just relist it and sell it and get those profits as quick as possible, because who knows what the rates are going to be in 3 months from now.
Correct. A lot of wholetails then today, it sounds like.
Love the wholesale model. Yeah, it's still working well. I tell you what, there's still markets, even these rural markets. We had one in Lint, Indiana, we just sold last week, a very rural area. But we listed for 124.9, I believe. We had a bidding war and got a cash buyer at 130. And we made a 40K profit on that one. And we did nothing but clean it out and minor landscaping. It was under $500 for everything.
It's such a granular market. And there are tons of markets, both in a maybe not so major metro sense, but pockets of major metros. And then certainly in the rural area, where the supply and demand is so mismatched, even today, there's just such tremendous demand.
It really is. And it's, you know, our business model has always been outside of the big city, say. Mm-hmm. So if you're in St. Louis, for example, if you go 30 minutes, 60 minutes, or even 2 hours outside that area, that's kind of our bread and butter. One, because we have way less competition. These banks know that they can just list the ones in St. Louis on the MLS. They are sell them pretty quickly that way. But when you go into these tertiary markets, secondary markets, it's a little harder to sell those. And they're not as aggressive with the pricing, usually initially, and then they get stuck with it for a while, and then they get much more aggressive with the pricing, and that's where I find the discounts. So these secondary and tertiary markets are kind of where we feast on.
How are you picking up properties?
We're picking most of them up through online auctions right now, and bank REOs. So we have agents, and I've built up so many agents over the years that are REO agents, whether in Pennsylvania, whether they're in Wyoming or Texas or Tucson, Arizona. They call me with deals or say, you know, this is finally getting to the price point where it's making sense. So they're kind of my boots on the ground. Everything we do is online auctions. We have no marketing costs. What we do, our costs are our time analyzing these deals and seeing, all right, does this one make sense? Okay, we could bid this one.
You're doing a lot of properties. Tell me about your team structure. What's it look like?
So there's myself and Michael. We're both the ones that have the educational company, but also run the day-to-day operations in the business. I have now three acquisition managers that run different auctions for me. I run as need to. I kind of fill in the void as need be. So I'm not nearly as busy with that as I used to be. I'm more in the coaching side now. And of course, in the crypto, as you know as well, too. Yeah. So I try to focus more on that and then kind of coordinate private money and mortgages and all these things for all these deals we're getting, because I think we've got 15 this past month alone that our acquisition managers have gotten. So we've been busy.
Yeah, I would say so. You mentioned private money. Just touch on that. There's a lot of money that has to go into play, especially when you're closing on these things, when you're wholesaling property. What's that typically look like? How is that made up? Where do you go find money? What's that capital stack, if you will, look like?
So my favorite is just traditional private lenders, whether they're people I met at RIAs, local RIAs over the years, like have a couple of relationships still in the Philadelphia area. And they're constantly lending me money on deals. Usually I have $1 million+ out with them at any given time on different deals. I have a couple other private lenders, you know, I've done 50,000, 100,000, 250 here and there. I have some others that kind of do deal to deal, like as they have cash or they have something in their IRA, hey, do you have something for around this price point? And I'll try to match up a property that makes sense with it and try to match it up. And if they don't have enough for the rehab, we usually fill in for the rehab ourselves. Sure. And the other ones we're using, we're starting to use them a lot more. Kiavi, Dominion Financial, RCN Capital, Lima One Capital, those kinds of companies. And they'll lend 90%. There's times when the economy, you know, just a few months ago, RCN was doing 100% program for investors. You have to do like 30 plus deals a year to qualify for that one. But that's a great program when you could borrow literally 100%, still 70% of the after. It just really makes things easier. The fun part is the cash flow game. Most of my private lenders are set up where they get paid either quarterly interest or they just get the payment at the end when we sell the property. And I love that because that's the most easy. The other ones through Kiavi or these other ones, monthly payments come out. So I got to make sure I have enough in the account to cover this, cover the contractors, and play that fun game.
No, there's you got to have some significant reserves stacked up there, especially when you return as many properties as you got going on.
And they won't lend unless you have a certain amount of reserves in there, right? Correct. So they're always checking your account statements, what you have in there, lending. So yeah, it's always that fun balance and fun game.
Have you thought about getting into commercial real estate, but don't know where to start? Or perhaps you're already in it. You want to take your business to the next level. Well, I'm personally inviting you to come to my hometown, Des Moines, Iowa, April 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Our live event, the Commercial Profit Power live event. We're going to be doing live deal analysis. We're doing property visits. We're literally getting in a shuttle and we're going to drive and see multiple assets. Pocket listings. How in the world can you go find listings and build relationships with brokers? How do you find off-market deals? how to structure the financing. So how do we able to raise capital from investors? And how do you put together proper structure when it comes to loans? And of course, there's going to be networking. So I invite you to come. You want to check it out? www.commercialprofitpower.com. That's www.commercialprofitpower.com. I love to see in person. Yeah. What's the biggest challenge that you face maybe over the course of last year? What has been the biggest challenge that you have faced?
The biggest in real estate investing?
Yeah.
So the biggest challenge right now has been, man, so many buyers fall out of contract. I'm not sure whether you're seeing this too, but this didn't happen obviously when the market was really hot.
Correct.
And rates were really low. But with the rates changing the way they are, we've had buyers fall out, not qualify, or if they didn't lock in a rate, it changed everything. The debt to income ratio changed and they couldn't close. So that's been our biggest challenge. So that's why we try to make sure when we're looking at these buyers that are coming in, the realtor gives us the deals for the most part, right? And brings them in when we're putting them on a traditional MLS, just making sure they have the funds and making sure they're solid buyers. That's the biggest thing we do right now. So, and that's helped with us making sure that we get these closings happening more consistent and not falling off and then going back on. I have one in Flossmoor, Illinois. We're finally going to close on either tomorrow or early next week. I had three buyers fall off that particular. Costs have gone up now, $14,500. It would have been just $2,500 if the first one had gone through. Now it's $14,500. So you can see how these eat up your profits.
In a hurry. What we have noticed is that buyers have gotten harder on the inspection.
Yes.
They're asking for way more stuff on the inspections.
They are. That's,
yeah.
We got that too. So we got one today, even from a cash buyer, he still did inspection on it here. And this is a small property in Lansing, Michigan, right? So we were under contract for 44. He's like, I can only do this move forward to 40. I'm like, all right, let's just meet in the middle and go to 42 and see where we go. So I'm still waiting the response there. It's not going to be a big deal. You know, we're only making like $6,000 to $8,000 on this one. It's a small little one. It's a quick turn, but it's still frustrating because that wouldn't happen a year ago. We wouldn't have had to deal with that.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're being smart. You think about it. Buyers are being smart. It gives them a negotiation tool. They haven't had a tool belt for 3 or 4 years here.
Sure. No, there's no doubt about that. Yes. Well, and then it also feels like maybe you don't do a lot of this given your tight time turn times. Is it's like FHA buyers' time to shine, because in the last 3 years, we all had choices. Every time you get an offer, you had five offers and FHA just gets tossed, right? No matter how strong it is.
Absolutely. And you think about it, tradition, depending on what price points you're selling at,
yes.
FHA buyers, you have the most buyers at the FHA level. So right. If you can make it FHA mortgageable, make sure there's no chipping paint, no flooring coming up, the appliances are all, everything's in good shape there. They're the best and you can usually get the most money from them. Even they're being picky right now with what they want,
right.
and totally being a seller assist is coming back into play big time. All these things are coming in, which I totally understand.
We notice that's commonplace in an FHA. There's definitely seller assist in those contracts.
It's funny though, because we're all complaining, but we really shouldn't complain because we're going back to a more normal market.
Correct.
Had, right? The way it used to be. So I'm looking at, okay, no, we're just going back here. It's going to be more of a buyer's market over the next few years. Totally fine. We actually do our best. We make more money when the market's going in a negative direction than in a positive. Going back to 2008 financial crisis. So there were so many, as you know, bank REOs on the books. It was ridiculous. There were properties that were listed for $225,000 to $235,000 that I was picking up for $90,000 from HUD. $90,000. So you're talking like a third of the value or 30, 40 cents on dollar. We're picking up properties from them. Now we can't even dream of those numbers. But as it shifts and as it goes a little bit more to a buyer's market, we're going to get a little bit better opportunities. And we already are. We're already seeing it right now.
Yeah, you're starting to see price reductions all across the country. You're seeing article after article coming off talking about some of the major cities, right? Some of those who had the highest run-ups in prices, how they're down 15 to 20% in some of their pricing. And some of that just has had to do with how fast it ran up. It just comes down just quick, right?
Oh, it sure does.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that because that was the tech sector, right? So the NASDAQ got destroyed last year.
Correct.
So we haven't seen the full ramifications of this yet. Where do these people live? They're in Silicon Valley. They moved to Boise, Idaho. They're in Denver, Colorado. They moved to Utah, where they have 9 times the inventory they did a year ago. And then also in Phoenix, Arizona. And the other newer hotspot for Silicon Valley people is Raleigh, North Carolina. But that's newer. So that didn't have the run-up that the other ones had. So they're not going to have as much of a hit because North Carolina is just more affordable.
Yep.
But you're seeing Texas and Arizona, the big liberal city in Austin, big hub for them. And they're really getting hammered right now.
The implication of what you said relative to the NASDAQ getting hammered and their exposure on the tech side of things, these tech heavy cities, is because you're seeing a lot of tech layoffs. Although nationwide, there's not a layoffs across the employment spectrum. You're seeing a large concentration inside of tech for sure. And then not only do they have layoffs, but NASDAQ was hammered, which means anybody who had option exposures and, yes, and some of their stock programs, it looks very different for them this year.
It sure does. We're just think about those tech jobs. They're big, high paying jobs. So they're in those markets that are very expensive markets. So they're the first ones that are going to get hit. I guess we won't see other markets get hit as much unless there is starting to become some kind of a heavy layoff. Maybe another retail sector's next, right? And then that's going to start. And that will hit mom and pop, right? That'll hit everybody retail. We'll see where that goes. Right now, we got such constricted inventory. We only have 429,000 houses on the market, which is so low, extraordinarily low, which is helping keeping prices afloat, keep them steady. When you look at the year end here, we might be not go even going negative. Some markets will go negative. Some will still be a little bit positive. You still have the Sun Belt where people want to live. So the Carolinas are still hot. Florida is still hot. Arizona is still hot because so many baby boomers still want to move there. So Tennessee, right? Tennessee. And all these states have a couple things in common, either low or no state income tax. So a lot of people retiring, try to get more money there. Yep. That would make their dollar stretch a little bit longer. I think that's an area that we need to concentrate as real estate investors on, and those markets, because we want to go to the markets where people are going to, not where they're leaving from.
That's exactly right. All things being equal, right? I mean, we talked about supply and demand earlier. A lot of that just has to do with the run-up has to be the fact that there was a mass exodus out of California, out of New York, out of Chicago, out of Illinois, and they largely went south.
They did. And we see them. And I was one of them. So I moved to Florida a little over a year and a half ago, Pennsylvania, right? So I'm one of those. And in my community, we probably have like 10 or 12 people from Philadelphia, but a ton from Chicago, from Michigan, from Wisconsin, from Minnesota, from all these higher tax states, right? And where people just want to get out of there and retire. And they also can't stand the politics going on in some of those states too. So there's a lot of factors that are driving people down.
Yeah. Talk to me about your education business in terms of how you help folks and who you help.
It's very interesting. Ours is a different model. So we're no marketing cost. It's just your time and energy. You're always buying on online auctions or bank REOs. So you're analyzing deals. So what we notice, a ton of our students are engineers. A lot are engineers. They don't like talking to people. Like I did direct mail for a little while. I'm doing TV advertising here in Southwest Florida, but I'm not the one talking to the people. My salespeople are. So I totally understand why people don't like it and have gravitated to our model. Plus they see the foreclosure trends going up and see where that opportunity is going to lead. And it's just easier. It's a little bit easier for them. They don't have to hire an acquisition manager, a disposition manager, and all these different things. They can literally do everything from their bedroom. Just bid, win a bid, wire out or mail out your earnest money deposit, get a mortgage, or if you have you're a cash buyer, just wire those funds, close, list it on the MLS and sell it, or coordinate a couple of different repairs. So that's kind of what we teach. We go through everything and we try to give them the highest and best use. We try to give them an idea of what are the best markets to be in right now, which ones to focus. And then we do deal reviews of ours and theirs on coaching calls. And then if they have a deal, we tell them, bring it to us so we can look at it. Make sure you're in a good deal. Like, I don't want you bidding. Look, you're underwater on this one. You got to cancel this one. So we do that. We make sure that they're protected. I don't want them getting in any deals and while the market's shifting and be holding something that's going to really hurt them.
Those deal review calls are priceless, aren't they?
Huge, huge. They love them. They love them because they want to understand why we thought this was a good deal. And what we saw, what we did to figure that out. And that's where you're really learning.
Have you been to the vault? RealGritVault.com. Listen, we've got multiple guests who come on and oftentimes they bring us little tips, tricks, tools, scripts, Excel calculators, a multitude of things, and they share it. They share it for you. You can get them totally free, totally free. RealGritVault.com. Ever been on the show who's brought everything? It's all behind the vault. Get it. RealGritVault.com. There's also so many nuances inside of doing this. And that's why, in my opinion, having a coach, having somebody to be able to guide you through that, because you can get them there and probably teach them, in a digital format, 90%, but it's that last 10% that's become so deal specific and that those deal review calls to be able to get in those nuances and make sure that it's about winning. Yes, but it's also about not losing. You just can't afford to lose.
Yes, absolutely. And you're so right. That last 10% is the most pivotal, important part of it. It's us going through and looking at and analyzing it for them and tell them, well, you actually, if you put 10,000 in this, you might be able to get a lot more. We have, for example, we have one in Cuero, Texas, that the as-is value is 95, and we picked it up for 53. So we could sell it as-is and do really well on it. But I asked the agent, I'm like, what's it need repairs? He goes, you're right around 10. What would it sell for after? 125. I'm like, all right, if I put 10,000, I make an extra 30. That makes sense for me. It's three times my money. So we're doing that. We're doing these repairs to get it, because now it's mortgageable to everybody. It's mortgageable FHA to conventional, you know, I mean, anybody.
Some people are just going, why wouldn't another buyer just buy it and put the $10,000 in? And the answer is most of the buyers don't have $10,000. Not only do they not have the money, they also have no idea how to ever execute on anything that would require $10,000 worth of work. But as soon as you bring it into a format where somebody can move in, as you said, it's mortgageable. They can just go get a mortgage and move right in.
And that's way easier. And that's what probably 98% of people out there. Most people don't want to do too much work on a property unless you're a young person that maybe has some skills that wants to get something under market value. So you have some equity in there, but that's such a small amount of the population. Right. I could tell you that's like none of the millennial population and probably none of the Gen Z coming up, or very little. Right. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, society as a whole on average, right? I mean, we're credit rich and cash poor. Yes. They would rather finance 30 grand and make a monthly payment on that 30 grand than shell out 10 grand out of their pocket, which largely they do not have.
Yeah. And that makes sense too, when you think, especially at low mortgage rates. It's been at what, 6.5, 6.25, whatever sure. We are right now. Yeah. That's still historically low, because 8% is our historical average in the United States throughout the history. So we're still at a pretty good number. And where else can you borrow 6.25%? Money, right? You're not going to do that with your credit card.
For 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's still the best deal out there.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. Let's do this. I'm going to move on to the final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
Your favorite question, the boldness, even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must more approve of the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Thomas Jefferson said it. What about that resonates most with you?
It's just, I'm a huge Thomas Jefferson fan. I'm a huge libertarian, hands-off, small government, everything. Yeah. And basically what he's saying is question everything with boldness. Really, question everything with boldness, even the existence of God. Because if there is a God, he'd much rather you question it and just have blindfolded faith in everything, right? He wants you to think. And I agree with that. God would want you to think for yourself and not just trust in anybody and everything that there is. He only wants you to have faith in him, really, truly. So that one just really resonated with me. I always really liked that one. And I think everything we do in life, and we teach our students to question a realtor. When a realtor gives you comps, it's trust but verify, and a Ronald Reagan statement, right? Trust yep. but verify. Look at it. We have our numbers, then we see theirs. Now, let's look at them side by side. If this is a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bathroom, 1,500 square foot home on 1/4 acre, why are they showing me a 5.3 on 2 acres, right? That's 2,500 square feet, because that's not a comparable. So you need to see apples to apples. That's why we try to teach them trust but verify. And that's a part of that, Thomas Jefferson.
I couldn't agree with more with your assessment relative to pushing back on a realtor and making sure you make sure they do their own homework.
Yes. Yeah, keep them in check. And the really good ones will give you fantastic numbers, will be on spot on.
Totally right.
And you trust them and you use them multiple times, because we've built so many relationships with realtors over the years. We do a deal with them. They usually get the acquisitions purchase price. They get the commission on that. Plus, if there is one, right, on these auctions, they don't offer. Plus the resale. And we tell them, we want to repeat this. So if you see anything in your market that looks good, bring it to us. And they do. A lot of them will. The more aggressive ones out there, especially now coming up in a down market, you'll get 10 times that amount because they don't have as much work and as much clients to deal with. Now you're going to be more of their focus so they can continue to get paid.
What happens in a down market is the buyer pool starts to dry up. And those who are built to survive and thrive like you have in your business in a down market, you just pick up market share. It just becomes the velocity deals becomes a lot easier.
It really does. And I'm looking future. I'm actually licensed agent in PA. I'm going to get my wife licensed down here in Florida just so we have that license. But I'd really like to see the whole way real estate is done and handled, get away from the agent thing more, or reduce costs for people. Because they've had a nice gravy train here for the last 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, but most realtors aren't worth much. I don't think they're the smartest people out there.
I'm in Iowa. It takes 60 hours, a couple other things, but it's 60 hours of pre-license work to be able to get your license. And if you were to cut hair in my great state, it takes 2,000.
Wow.
Ever had a bad haircut, Paul?
Yeah, exactly.
We can imagine what a real estate transaction looks like with the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately. And you know, you run into that sometimes, you live and you learn, you move on. But I do think like Redfin's out there now trying to push their 1%, yep. I guess it's whatever that is. And I think you're seeing more of that kind of thing, more transactionally happen, which could be good. It could be good for both investors because one, it'll increase our profits, right? Correct. Our profit margin when we're releasing them. But it'd be good for sellers too. Because they're going to keep more of their money from the equity of their property.
Yeah, if you can reduce that friction cost associated with any transaction, just as you know, electronic trading did in the stock market, it just means things get a little tighter, and ultimately, you know, both sides of that transaction should benefit.
Right. E-trade totally changed everything with what the $7 stock trade is compared to 30 or 50 for each transaction. And the same thing is going to happen with cryptos too. It's already kind of happened with there, where the prices have been going down. It with different exchanges. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, you're active in the crypto market. In fact, in the circle we run, I think you were one of the first, if not the first person who was talking about crypto very early on, and probably runs right in line with that libertarian belief that you possess. Totally. Right.
You are so right. And that's why I gravitated to it. And I first started to gravitate to it in 2013.
But
I was so busy with deals.
Yeah.
And it was so difficult to buy Bitcoin at that point. It would have been Mt. Gox, you know, which means I would have been at risk with that. I didn't start buying Bitcoin and others until early, I think around May of 2017, but it was only like $2,800 at that point. It was cheap. And it had to run up to around 20K at the end of 2017. Then of course, went into that long bear market. And then I just kept putting, you know, $500 to $1,000 from a profit from each deal I had into whether it's Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash, Cardano, any of these other ones over the years. And then everything was doing well. And then it really crashed during COVID.
Right.
That's when Bitcoin, interestingly, went down to 4,840. So it was cheaper to buy Bitcoin than it was to mine it. It cost more to mine it than it did to buy it. So I'm like, all right, I got to buy more. So I told my wife and she thought it was nuts. I'm like, I'm going to pull $25,000 loan out of my life insurance and buy 5 Bitcoin with it. I did that year and it went up to what, 60 grand or whatever. Yeah. It was 40 some grand at the end of that year. So it was best investment I had made that year. Return on investment, that is, you know?
Yeah, no, it's incredible.
It is. It's different, you know, it's going down and it had all these bad things happen to it. This is good. This is healthy. Even though my portfolio sucked compared to what it used to look, you know, I'm 5 to 7 years out when I do these, when I'm into these cryptos. I'm long-term and only into certain ones because there's a lot that are just going to go away.
They're going to get, it's going to be like, in my mind, it's going to be like the dot-com era, right?
Oh, you hit the nail on the head.
A portion of these, I mean, what number of crypto coins exist now? North of 3,000?
Yes, north of 3,000.
I mean, they're in how many can the average person name? Bitcoin and like not many others, right? If any others, there's going to be they're just going to get wiped.
They are. And it needs to, because there's a lot of frauds out there. There's a lot of fakes. And I've seen a lot of them. I actually know of one. I'm not going to name the name that's in here in the state of Florida. But there's a lot of frauds out there. There's a lot of fakes. Unfortunately, when it's the Wild Wild West, right? And I love the Wild West because Wild Wild West brings great opportunity, but also great opportunity to lose. So you just got to be smart. Do a little bit of homework. Don't trust you heard your cousin Vinny talking about it and do your own homework, do your research, because you want to be in the ones that actually have something going. There's a lot of coins. They just make coins and they haven't done anything yet. Correct. You want to be in the protocol that have something behind it or multiple layers or multiple things going on. Those are the ones that are going to have a little bit more chance or a lot better chance at having.
Yeah. Stuff. Those that have utility value, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, outside, what do you think holds most investors back in the real estate side from hitting their personal next level?
From getting to the next level from the beginning to the end, themselves, you know, and it was me for the longest time. I'll give you, for example, I was a one-man band for a long time before I decided to hire other people to do things. I think we hold ourselves back, bring on people. Well, one, it's more responsibility, but two, we're going to lose a piece of the pie. Well, the thing is, when you bring in enough people, they bring in way more than you are bringing in. Yeah. So it's well worth that. It's well worth that opportunity. That's really, I think, what holds people back in fear. People are fearful naturally. I mean, I am as well to an extent. I'm less fearful than most, but I still have like, do I do this or should I not? You know,
we hold ourselves back. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
It's crypto, yeah. One, and then sports. I coach travel baseball for 11 years.
Wow.
My oldest son is the closer for Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania.
Terrific.
My younger boy stopped playing, but that's all right. Now we're playing pickle and paddle, which is platform tennis and things yep. like that. That's what I'm most passionate about.
What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Through coaching. So coaching was the best, right? You're not paid for anything. You're giving your time and energy. And I'll explain how it was so rewarding, right? So I coach these kids. We are in a championship game every year, about 1 year. And they experience almost all losses in the championship game. And they grew from them. So last year, the high school from Pennsylvania, where I used to be, we had a bunch of juniors from my team. I think 7 out of the 9 kids that were starters, they won their first championship ever in baseball. First one ever. And I remember congratulating each of them and they were sad, but it was those losses which made them better. Now, I think they'll repeat again this year too. They have a great chance to repeat, but failure breeds success. You know, listen, guys like Michael Jordan, some of these great athletes, they didn't fail. If they didn't get cut, it wouldn't have driven them to get to that next level.
Fair to say you learn more from failure than you do from success.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
For a lot of folks, it is who don't believe that, or I guess haven't given thought to it. It's that shift in mentality and it'll totally change your outcome.
Completely agree.
We launched the Real Grit Vault this year. It's a collection of resources available to our listeners. I understand you're making a contribution, a property analysis spreadsheet to our vault. Tell us a little about that.
So this is a spreadsheet that we use on all of our deals, and there's multiple layers that we can have to them. We have one set up for just a wholesale, another one for wholesale, another one for a full scale fix and flip. And it just gives you numbers that you plug and play. It'll spit out the numbers for you on a rehab. So it just makes things nice and easy for you. It simplifies everything so you're not manually doing handwriting.
Yeah, that's incredible. Guys, you can get that at www.realgritvault.com. Paul, I appreciate you taking the time to connect here. You've got a great story about how you got into this business and out of banking, really some high level intelligent banking at that, to be able to come in and kind of paying an homage back to the banking days about how you use, you know, so much of your distribution or your lead flow, deal flow is banks or our banks.
Banks. Yeah. Ironically, right? It really is ironic. We're from the banks now, I'm buying the banks. Went working at the banks, now I'm robbing the banks, technically.
For people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. Where should they go? What should they do?
So if you want to follow me on YouTube, it's The Virtual Investor on the YouTube channel. And if you want to find out about our educational program, it's REO. It's REO, auctionacademy.com. And another one where if they wanted to just join our calls monthly, our coaching calls, it's $97 a month. They can cancel anytime. That's fliprealestatevirtually.com.
Perfect. We'll make sure we get all the links below in the show notes, everybody. Paul, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Appreciate it too. Thank you very much.
You bet. For everybody here, Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Neil Timmons. I've got a question for you. Are you a fix and flipper and want to leverage your skills, build passive income, create bigger paydays? Maybe you buy and hold rental houses and you want to increase your income by working less. Maybe you're executing on the Burr methodology. And times being what they are, you're finding more cash locked into a deal. Maybe you want more predictable profits, or maybe this is your first go at real estate. Well, I've got a challenge for you. The 20X Profit Challenge. It's hosted and taught by yours truly. I'm going to teach and show you over the course of 5 days in this totally free challenge, how to 20X your profit. Lesson one's a game changer, multiplying your income and capital fast. Lesson two is the perfect plan. I'm going to show you how to be getting off-market 20X profit deals coming to you. The cash flow multipliers, lesson three, how to rapidly force appreciation and income growth. Lesson four is the deal accelerator, buying and holding profit guarantee properties. And lesson five, the wealth accumulator, consistently closing a 20X profit deals. I'm going to show you exactly my methodology, exactly what I did to go from where I was at, not achieving the results I wanted to achieve in my life, not achieving the passive income that I hoped for, that I knew I was capable of, and in 3.5 years, becoming financially free. I'm going to do that in a 5-day free challenge. To sign up, go to 20xprofitchallenge.com, 20xprofitchallenge.com. We've got one coming up. Go there now, register. It's totally free. 20xprofitchallenge.com. And I'll see you in the challenge.